Okay, I'm going to talk about modeling of coronal loop oscillations in realistic magnetic intensity structures. Basically, the usefulness of this is for coronal seismology. Can you hear me now? Okay, we want to use linear waves and nonlinear waves for coronal seismology based on previous theory that was developed mainly in slabs. We have the four main modes that are of interest, are the sausage mode, the kink mode, the torsional and magnetoacoustic modes. But as you can see, they were developed in simplified structures such as cylinders shown on the left. In linear approximation. So simplified coronal seismology, we find relation between the magnetic field and the phase speed of the mode that we identify in our structure. So for example, for a kink mode or for an Alfheim wave, we can identify the phase speed, and then we have simple relation that relates between the length of the loop, the period of the oscillation, the kink speed, the Alfheim speed, and eventually the magnetic field, which is difficult to measure with other methods in the corona. So, of course, if we have flows, we need to consider the effects of Doppler motion in these rapid flows. So on the left, in the dashed line, you can see the approach of coronal seismology, which basically uses observations, wave periods, and theory, an idealized MHD theory to get the parameters of the plasma shown in the green box. But in order to increase the accuracy and the usefulness of this method, we need to take realistic structures and use 3D MHD modeling, where we can consider both linear and nonlinear interactions on waves and the effects of the magnetic field. So to do that, we can use either an analytical model of the field, which is more complex than a simple slab, and such as a dipole, or we can include magnetic field extrapolation models. So that we use in MHD equations and obtain our structure. So this is an example of our previous studies that shows the effect of a pulse launched in a coronal loop, where the coronal loop was stationary, and then as a result, the coronal loop is seen to oscillate over here. Now, motivated by AIA and Hinode observations, we now know that a lot of these loops contain flows in addition to the waves, as shown here. So you can see there are blue shifts here, and when we look at the difference images of the EUV lines, like the AA171, we can find propagating disturbances that travel along the loop. So the question is, what is the contributions of flows to these structures, and what is the contribution of waves? Of course, this question is important, again, for the application of coronal seismology, since if these are flows that travel independently of the magnetic structure and density structure, temperature structure of the loop, they are not as useful for coronal seismology as waves that basically provide information on the background plasma. So this is an idealized model of an active region that is the next step after the slabs, which uses a dipole field. So now the magnetic field structure is more realistic, and we can reproduce some of the features that are observed in coronal loops. So here what you see, we launch a pulse inside a bipolar region, and the pulse properties are defined in the model. These are time-dependent pulses, and we can have either a continuous inflow or a periodic pulse. Then in addition to this magnetic field, we also have a stratified density, stratified by the gravity, which is given here. So you can see there is a density structure on the left, and this is the corresponding fast ultrasonic speed, and the plasma beta, which is less than one in the active region. Of course, it's an isothermal model, so we can investigate various temperatures separately, and this is a higher temperature plasma, so you can see that the beta gets to be pretty high quite low in the corona. Then we can apply, use our MHD model, and then run the inflow. As you can see here, these are periodic inflows, and here is a continuous inflow which initially excites a slow magnetosonic wave. Now the response of the field is quite weak, and you can don't see it, but it is evidently weak because these flows are mostly along the field lines, although they do exert force on the field due to the fact that these field lines are curved. Now you can see the long loops, we don't establish a siphon flow, but we do see the effect of both the flows and the compression caused by the fast magnetosonic wave. And here is a comparison to and observe the sequence of jets you can see on the left with SDO, and you can see some qualitative agreement between these images. So now this is a set of these structures, but let's skip that. And we can analyze the oscillations at various parts of the loop, and then we can see that we have both slow magnetosonic waves, as evident by the time distance diagram, as well as the kink oscillation of the waves, and they are present simultaneously in the loop. So, but we want to go beyond an idealized magnetic structure, just a bipolar structure. We want to take a realistic field. So this is a work in progress where we use the nonlinear force-free field using the quasi-Grad-Rubin method developed by Anna Malanushenko. You can ask her for details. But the basic novelty of this approach is that it's not only a regular nonlinear force-free extrapolation, but it also uses the constraints of the structures of the loops in order to construct the nonlinear field. So the loop structure is better representative of the actual observation. So you can see the 171 angstrom emission, and then you can see the loops reconstructed from the model. Of course, if you know the field, you can calculate the free energy, the total energy, fraction to potential energy, and so on. And what we have, what we did basically, we used this field as initial state in our 3D MHD model. So first, we want to see if indeed this state is stable, given that we are taking extrapolation and then plugging it into the field. And what you see on the left is an animation of the field as it's been inserted. So initially, you see some reconfiguration, but then sort of some field lines change, but overall, the structure remains stable. You can, of course, this is not current-free. We have a current structure, and this is an animation that shows the isosurface of the currents as they are concentrated in the central part of the nonlinear force-free field. So again, you can see that the currents, as the frames roll, you can see that the currents don't change much, so the field are stable. And then on the right, of course, we have to mention that in addition to the field, which is a nonlinear force-free field, is a vacuum field. It doesn't have any plasma. But in the MHD model, the density is finite. So here we added gravitationally stratified density, which is at equilibrium by itself. So that way, it does not affect the field. So it's in gravitational equilibrium as given here on the right. So then also the force-free, the fast magnetosonic speed is not uniform or not stratified uniformly as in the previous case. Now it has this structure, as you can see, depending on the actual structure of the magnetic field. And this has, of course, strong effect on the way that the waves are going to be propagating, especially when we're dealing with fast magnetosonic waves, since they are going to be reflected from regions of high fast magnetosonic speed. So the next step is to inject flows, and that's what we did here. This is a model where we introduce a flow into this actual region. As you can see, this flow is about 40% of the sound speed, and you can see the density as a surface at about 7.5%. So the density increases in this region when we inject the flow, and you can see that the field adjusts, especially the field lines that connect to that region adjust due to the flow injection. Of course, we can try faster inflow. This is, for example, close to the sound speed, and the density enhancement is higher. Also, we injected flow at several points, but in this region, the flow propagates along the field as the field bends at lower height, and you can see that the flow performs a type of siphon motion. And you can see this better when we remove the field lines and just look at the density concentration as it evolves due to the flow injection. So now, when we take a cut at the XY plane, it should be XY plane, we can see that the inflow also generates a fast multisonic wave, as seen here in the running difference images due to the injection. So the other point I wanted to mention briefly, and you can see more details in the poster by Tong Yang Lang et al., poster number 136, where we investigated injection of multiple pulses into a background field, again to investigate the effect of flows on the generation of slow multisonic waves. And basically, what you see here is the result of this modeling, where we inject a train of waves into flow pulses, and these flow pulses we find generate slow multisonic waves along these loops. And what we can see here, that initially we have some flows close to the foot point of the loops. We can discern the flows, but as the disturbances propagate, they are dominated by the waves. And the height where we can detect the flows depends, of course, on the speed of the injection. So for supersonic flows, they may be 0.2 solar radii where the flows are detected, but at lower speed, these flows fall back to the sun very quickly, and so we have wave-dominated disturbances as they propagate farther into the sun. So to conclude, chronal seismology that has been proposed decades ago is now becoming useful to study the properties of coronal plasma using linear and nonlinear MHD waves. Of course, the first shot of this problem was used with linear waves and idealized solutions, dispersion relations, but they are limited to very idealized conditions. And when the coronal field is much more complex and the excitation of these waves is more complex, we need to resort to 3D MHD modeling in order to recover some of the observed features and make coronal seismology more accurate. And here we provide sort of the first steps with a dipole field, and then further with nonlinear force-free field using the quasi-Grad-Rubin approach, and we are able to reproduce the observed features of the flows and the waves that we see in the corona. Thank you.
Does your 3D MHD simulation say something about the energetics of this flare? I mean, this was an X2 flare, and the non-potential energy in this active region new model was about 30%, according to a paper by Sun et al. But when the X flare happened, there was only a small jump of about 1%. So a very small fraction gets dissipated. So I'm wondering if you, with your simulations, can explain how this energy gets dissipated and why so little?
In principle, yes, the MHD model can calculate the evolution of the field from pre-flare to post-flare situation. However, this model does not include the flare and the recollection that is taking place in the energy release. So this model was geared to study waves, but in principle, one can do that with 3D imaging.
But this central sigmoid, where most of the energy is, it doesn't erupt. What does it do? I mean, can you tell from the 3D simulation?
From this simulation, as I say, since we initiate the simulation with nonlinear force-free field, which is stable, okay? The nonlinear force-free field doesn't have, it is force-free, there are no forces, so that's why it is not supposed to move, and that's what we see indeed here. Now, if one would study reconnection, by which the field would reconfigure and change from nonlinear force-free state, then we would see the eruption. But as I say, in principle, yes, but this is not the goal of this model.
Bill. Yeah, I just have a general comment about, or general thought about coronal seismology. You know, for seismology to work, you have to have a demonstrable, I'm talking about your second point here, the existence of inhomogeneity is, I think, a critical one in the corona. I mean, nobody believes that the Alfvén speed, if you take a cut through any active region, is anything other than a spectrum of, we don't know what the smallest scale is, down to the kinetic scales, probably. So my question is, why should we as a community believe helioseismology is going to work? Has it been demonstrated that the wave motions will not couple to themselves, as Parker has argued, so you don't get things like phase mixing, you get coupling of nonlinear wave modes all over the place. Indeed, the data themselves, because they decay so fast, these transverse oscillations, indicate that some mode process must be going on, I believe. So that why would one believe in a naive wave interpretation in an environment that is basically like seaweed being blown around on the bottom of the ocean?
Okay, to extend your analogy, right, we don't need to look at individual weeds of the seaweeds, because the seaweeds provide us the motion of the global motion of the water. So if we have a fast intersonic wave that is moving through the medium, we don't care about the details. Of course, it depends, of course, on the resolution we want to predict the field, but the motion of fast intersonic wave, the fronts that we see are quite uniform, or they are non-uniform, of course, but the non-uniformity is on a large scale, not on a... So the large-scale prediction of the field is definitely possible. And the other point I want to make is that when you look at individual loops, then there are quite a few cases already in the literature where people have looked at individual loops, measured the field using coronal seismology, and compared it to other methods. And these tend to agree within a factor of two. But again, as this is a new field that is being developed, I think it is very promising, especially as the methods improve.